Denise Levertov was a prolific poet, and she wrote many of her poems with a spiritual or religious leaning. And this poem, The Fountain, resonates in many ways, and each of us will hear it in our own way. I will help us travel through it this morning. Let's hear her words again. Don't say there is no water to solace the dryness at our hearts. I have seen the fountain springing out of the rock wall, and you drinking there. And I, too, before your eyes, found footholds and climbed to drink the cool water. The woman of that place, shading her eyes, frowned as she watched, but not because she grudged the water, only because she was waiting to see we drank our fill and were refreshed. Don't say there is no water. That fountain is there among the scalloped green and gray stones. It is still there and always there, with its quiet song and strange power to spring in us up and out through the rock. I don't know about you, but these hot summer days remind me of the value of having fresh water when the need to keep ourselves hydrated is vital. And if you have plants in your yards and gardens, then the heat demands that we keep them watered often. And even more importantly, the local farmers that grow our food have the constant concern of watering their crops. There is a tremendous cost in keeping things wet, says Edward Davidian, president of the Massachusetts Farm Bureau. He was quoted in Friday's Boston Globe, an article titled, "Thirsty for Rain, Severe to Moderate Drought Encases the State." This article provides a graphic showing our part of the state in the severe category, which is a bit alarming. At this time, about 120 towns and cities across the state have water restrictions in place. And frankly, I would be fine with Haverhill setting restrictions as well, if for no other reason than to raise the public awareness and require people to participate in conservation measures in their own yards and homes. I remember learning several years ago from the Haverhill Water Department that our usage of water in the summer doubles. Surely we can reduce this with our collective public effort to conserve in the face of drought. As an old English proverb states, we never know the worth of water till the well is dry. At our house, we have four rain barrels positioned to catch the rainwater runoff from the four corners of our roofs. Each of these 50-plus gallon barrels can fill quite rapidly during a summer thunderstorm. At this time, they can empty quite rapidly, too. This ritual of watering that I do takes about 20 minutes as I fill several watering cans, visit all my plants with a drink, and then return to refill the watering cans again. Unless I am in a hurry to get somewhere, I find this process to be calming, a chance to check in with all the plants in the yard and to be meditative with the water. And in fact, this morning when I was a little nervous about the service, I watered my plants and it helped. What is it about the action of watering that is so powerful? Perhaps you have felt calmed too when watering. I am grateful for the opportunity to harvest the water from my roof and into the barrels, and for the opportunity, in one small way, to conserve our precious city water. This current drought in our region or anywhere in the world should not be ignored. Neither is it okay to ignore any drought in our hearts, or as Denise Levertov states in her poem, a dryness at our hearts. At this point in human history, with all the troubling news both here and across the world, it can be all too easy to feel a sense of hopelessness, powerlessness, and even despair. Our hearts thirst along with the drying soil. We thirst for good news, for actions we can take that can make a difference, for solutions to what seems like unending violence and conflict. We thirst for news of reconciliation, healing, and hope. Levertov's poem leads us to fresh imagery that resonates in our thirsty souls. She says, I have seen the fountain springing out of the rock wall and you drinking there. And I too, before your eyes, found footholds and climbed to drink the cool water. In just a few lines, I am back in the natural world at a spring that surprises and delights me with the universal presence that water brings, refreshment to the human spirit. It is only in this space that I can reconnect with what I know is my own true nature. If I am to deal with the drought of love and kindness and human kindness that bombards me daily in the news, I must first connect with myself. What intrigues me about this poem is the idea that the speaker is not alone, that someone is there at the spring to witness its finding. It is a communal experience. I am reminded of times when I have felt lost in my own darker feelings, and somehow springing into my experience, like the water out of the rocks, I have been surprised to find a moment of joy. Sometimes it's conversing with a stranger, but more often with friends or a family member, or sometimes in my teacher role, in interaction with a student. The healing images of this poem remind me that we all need others to bear witness to our lives and stories. In this case, the woman watching the speaker drink is bearing witness to the joy of finding and drinking the cold water. The presence of others can strengthen and hearten us and bring sustenance to our spirits. We know that drinking water keeps us alive and sustains us, but just being in the presence of a body of water can be very heartening. To watch water move, to hear a flowing stream or the pound of waves, to ride on a boat or a kayak, to swim. The qualities of water are powerful and can alter our point of view. Sigrid Undset, a Norwegian novelist from the early 20th century, known for her agnosticism, stated the following about the effect of water on her. She says, in all the years when I did not know what to believe in, and therefore preferred to leave all beliefs alone, whenever I came to a place where living water welled up, blessedly cold and sweet and pure, from the earth's dark bosom, I felt that after all, it must be wrong to not believe in anything. Indeed, water stirs emotions in ways that can leave me in awe of the universe. I drive past Canosa Lake, our city's water supply, on my way to work most days, and many weekends, Hal and I have hiked the beautiful trail around the lake. Without fail, the lake has its way with me, bringing me closer to myself, while at the same time tapping my sense that I am only part of something much larger. Its presence and continued movement helps me move towards healing. This poem, with the central image of the fountain or spring emerging from the rocks, reminds me of when I was a teenager. At that point, my family was living in Mountain Home, Pennsylvania, a small town nestled in the middle of the Pocono Mountains in northeast Pennsylvania. I feel fortunate to have lived those years in that area because my sister and I took many hikes in the woods near our home and would climb what was called Cresco Heights. In the spring, when we were out looking for our first glimpse of lady slippers in the woods, we found one year a spot of lush green and discovered a spring coming out of the rocks on one of the red-rocked cliffs. I remember sitting there just listening and marveling at the gentle sound of water coming out of the earth. We did not drink the water since our parents had warned us against drinking water in the local streams, but still, it provided a refreshing secret place, a place where I spent precious time with my sister in the wild. It became one of my favorite places to go to find comfort, calmness, and serenity. Another way of exploring the power of water is expressed by Starhawk, environmental activist and spiritual leader. In her book, The Earth Path, she goes beyond thinking of what water evokes in us by challenging us to see water as having its own awareness. She says, all water is one, one whole, one awareness. All water is continuously aware of all water in the world. When I read that and hear it, I think of the oceans and their enormity and all the connectedness there. She invites us to think of having a balanced relationship with water. So with that in mind, this is the moment when you can participate a little bit. I want you to think for a minute, what would you do in your life, particularly during this period of drought, to have a more balanced relationship with water? And so here are some ideas. Would you work to conserve, and how would you do that? Would you get involved with cleaning the rivers or the streams or the beaches? Would you find ways to make sure water is sent to drought-stricken areas or where the water is not clean? Would you find ways to consistently be near a body of water to ask of its wisdom? Would you go for a swim and immerse yourself in its power? So, what would you do? Now, we're not going to run around with the mic, but if a few of you want to state what you would do, if I hear you, I will restate it. What do you think you would do to restore or create a more balanced relationship with water? This is the summer chance to be more informal. Anybody? Swim, waste less of it. What else?
Take fast showers.
Watch it. What else?
It's like the rain barrel idea.
The rain barrels?
Yeah. Take a shower with a bucket.
Take a shower with a
friend. Take a shower with a friend.
That's a good one. Absolutely. Make sure that's activism. That makes sure what happens in Flint doesn't happen any Flint, Michigan, happen anywhere else. Yes. Clean up the beach.
Learn from what happened in Oak Crest, California.
Yes. From the California, and the Californians have been in drought for a long time. And that's, are you referring to fire that comes from it? Yeah.
Fire, dry up trees, bark beetles.
Yeah, many things to learn.
Boycott
Nestle. Others?
They're in California too.
They're in California. So the collective always has more wisdom than one. So thank you for sharing your ideas and thinking about this for a moment this morning. Today, in this gathered community, we have heard the words of a poem called The Fountain, and its reminder of the water's power to move us and surprise us and refresh us. Its very presence can help us transcend our singular lives. We are reminded that we are here to commune with others, to witness others' joy and renewal. We are reminded of the power of creativity and our ability to take action to reshape our worlds when we tap into the universal. I'd like to just repeat those last couple lines to remind ourselves. It is still there and always there with its quiet song and strange power to spring in us, up, and through the rocks.